Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this January 23rd, 2012, to talk about what's coming, the good, the bad, and maybe the not so pretty. And to lead us or to synergize us, Mike Causey, senior correspondent. Without you don't really need an introduction.
Without portfolio, I love that. I don't know what it means, but I like it.
Portfolio.
Without portfolio. Yeah.
I brought one. Yeah. And John Elliott, federal benefit strategist, retired seminar presenter, retired federal worker bee, and email answerer. Good morning,
yes,
John.
Yes, I'm totally retiring, but not shy.
You've
good
never
morning.
Been shy. And that's good.
Yes.
Because that brings out the best in people. Okay, let's start off positive. What's the good?
Well, let's go on. Let's move on. You know, I if there is anything good, when President Obama proposed a 0.5% pay raise, I thought the reaction would be, you know, people would march on the White House and the unions would jump up and down. But they're all seeing it as a positive thing, as opposed to him proposing no raise and then sort of going along with the congressional intent to freeze pay for another year.
Is there any rumbling that anything will follow beyond the 5% in a year or two? Would it go to 1%? I mean, you have ears closer to ground than I think John or I do.
I hear nothing. You know, your guess is as good as mine.
It's a 0.5% raise, isn't it?
Yeah, 0.5.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because...
We don't want to get them all... happy about getting a 5% raise.
No, I said 0.5.
I know you did.
Yeah, it's no five. The days of 5% raises are maybe gone with the wind for a long, long time.
Okay, now I don't want to veer this off to taxes right away, but one of the good things coming is, well, depends on how you look at it, is the Roth TSP. And it's rumored to come in the second quarter this year, probably June-ish. We will have the main people on the show, hopefully late April, early May, the director of the thrift. And he always comes with somebody else, but they'll explain it. Now, let me do it quickly, not to put people to sleep with the first good topic. The Roth TSP allows people who otherwise couldn't put money into a Roth to be able to put money into a Roth. And you'd say, what do you mean by that? Can't anybody put money into a Roth? Not necessarily. If one's income is too high, and we're talking about high, if a combined income on a joint return $179,000 or on a single return $107,000, they can't put money into a Roth IRA, but they would be able to put money into a Roth TSP. So people that may have been locked out can now get in. However, for those that contributed to the regular TSP, received a tax deduction to do so. So these people, in fact, are eligible to do it, but probably the ones that most benefit from putting money into the current TSP, because they get a tax deduction and they're in a high bracket. So there needs to be some analysis, not this morning, as to whether the tax benefit up front is better than the no tax in the future. And you'd go, well, how bad can that be, no tax in the future? Well, that's what a Roth is. If you put money into a Roth and you leave it in for a certain period of time, and you're a certain age, when you take it out, there's no tax. Well, the Roth IRA, there's no reason to take the money out even when you hit 70 and a half because there's no requirement. However, there is with a Roth TSP. So there are differences, but I would say it's a pretty good thing, especially maybe for somebody very young, first entering. Forgo the tax benefit because it doesn't mean as much to them then. And with the size and the amount of money that you can put into this, 16.5, you know, if you're in the early stages of one's career, you might forgo the benefit because then you have 30 years of growth with no tax coming out at the end. So it might be tilted towards those folks should they be able to afford to do that, because when you first start to work, that's an awful lot of money. So I would say that's a good thing, and we'll have a whole lot more to talk. It would enjoy all the benefits that the current TSP, it's just got Roth in front of it. There's a matching provision for those in FERS. It's pretty nice. So then you get matching on top of the other, and that's a powerful lot of money.
That's amazing. This is apropos really nothing, but do these numbers change at the $107,000 level for singles and $179,000 for married couple?
Ever so slightly. Every year, okay. Tax brackets are, quote, indexed to inflation, end of quote. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, years ago, they were just set and that was it. But each year now, the amount in a tax bracket goes up. In other words, your taxes are, in fact, lowered. So here, though, it's a detriment because in prior to this, the max was $177,000. Now it's $179,000. Prior to this, it was $105,000. Now it's $107,000. So it goes up a little bit.
What I was getting at was, at some point they had to start out with a number, with two numbers, and they said, "Here's the limit. If you make more than this, you can't do it. If you make less, you can."
Right.
For both the same. I wonder how they arrived at that limit, because nearly every piece of legislation that comes out of Capitol Hill, it benefits some particular person, maybe a staff person, maybe the member of Congress himself, maybe a constituent or a friend. But I just wonder how they set those two numbers in the very beginning.
Well, there are other things in the law like this, that if you make between a range, and this is like this as well, and if you go beyond that range, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you make less than the beginning part of the range, you can do it. So rather than having people fall off a cliff, if you were to say, if you make more than X, you can't do it. If you make less than X, you can do it. They kind of say, well, we're going to phase you out. And a lot in taxes is like that. If your income is between X and Y, you can still do it. But if it goes above Y, you can't do it. If you go below X, just go ahead in. So I won't say it's a sense of fairness, but you're right. There's a lot of tax legislation, the old crazy cousin rule for somebody mm-hmm. in Congress and the like. There are things behind that, and there are social things, but this is more geared at, well, those that make an awful lot of money shouldn't be able to do this. Well, in this case, they can't. But with regards to a Roth TSP, income is immaterial. So, in fact, it could benefit those that make an awful lot, although I think the benefit for the younger folks is the greater benefit for the time that it can grow. So, anyway, I would say that that's a good thing, and we'll certainly have more on that later, I would say. And hopefully we'll get them maybe May. May probably is right before the thing gets launched. I doubt they'll do everything in the hour that we have, but they'll do a lot more than what anybody else could in that hour. And we probably won't take calls that day, but we will take calls this morning. We're at 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. And you're listening to For Your Benefit. It's about 10:15, Monday a.m., the 23rd. We'll be on till about 10:58 this morning. Don't call after that. We won't be here, but you can email us. We'll do the email later. Alrighty, Mike, I did the good. How about the bad?
Well, there are a number of things. There's a congressional committee, a House Senate committee, Republicans and Democrats, bipartisan, bicameral, all that sort of thing. And they are now looking at a number of proposals to bring the trim $1.2 trillion, I think it is, from the budget, from the deficit. And so there are a lot of things on that list, but things of interest for federal workers include things like freezing federal pay for another year, increasing the percentage people kick into the FERS and CSRS retirement systems, eliminate the FERS minimum supplement for people who retire before they become eligible for Social Security, and you know, go on down the list, high three to high five, a variety of things, the voucher. Maybe to make people pay more for their health insurance or give them a fixed amount to encourage them to go into lower premium plans. So all of the things that we worried about last year and that various groups looked at and then didn't do, those are back with us. And the deadline date, allegedly, is February 29th. So they must make a decision by that date. Now, we've had committees like this before who had deadline dates. the deadline came and went, and they didn't do anything. But it's like the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoon show. People keep saying, this time for sure. This time they have to do something.
Okay, let's take a look at a couple of those. Freeze the pay is pretty obvious. But increase the percentage that the individual puts into their retirement system. Currently, John, what's it for CSRS?
7%. It's 7.5% for law enforcement, firefighters, and air traffic controllers. But everybody else, it's 7%. And for FERS, it's 0.8%, or 1.3% for the special groups I just mentioned. That's currently. So.
Okay. Now that if we look at that, if it goes up, there's no tax benefit while one is working. There's a tax benefit when they retire. The tax benefit for a FERS person is really not what it is for a CSRSer, because the CSRSer has put so much more in. But the reason that one has this money taken out is they are entitled to an annuity. Some people call it a pension. Let's call it whatever you want. When they retire, they're guaranteed to get a monthly payment. Now, these monthly payments are generated under a provision called a defined benefit. In other words, if you work so many years and you make so much money, we will define what we're going to pay you for the rest of your life. And so that money really isn't going to grow to that level to pay that person for the rest of their life. A defined contribution, on the other hand, is something like the TSP. It's up to you. You want to put in no percent? That's fine. Doesn't make any sense.
But it's cool. Not fine, but it's...
You know, but it's whatever they want.
Yes,
you know, we're very liberal
choice,
here. Yeah. Okay, and if you want to be, I think what John's saying is smart, put something in at least 5%, because then you get a match.
Free 5% match.
So where else are you going to earn 100% on your money, even in today's world? And that's 100%. You put in 5, they put in 5, you made...
Unless you're Bain Capital, you know, one of those guys.
Okay. But see, this is, you're defining what you're putting in, and hopefully you will be able to grow that, but you also have a defined benefit program. Maybe it's not as attractive as CSRS, but you got kind of two things going for you, as well as Social Security. We'll probably get some howls with that comment, but whatever it is, there's probably going to be some Social Security.
Yeah, I mean, we know what the moving parts are in terms of fixing Social Security. It's just the political will to do so, which has never been there and doesn't look like it's there yet. But it's fixable, and it's not necessarily a hard or painful fix either, although it gets harder the longer they delay.
Okay. Mike also mentioned eliminating the supplement. They call it the supplement. If somebody retires on a FERS before 66, they get a 62. Then they get a bump up in the payment, and they call this a supplement, which is parallel to Social Security. But it's real important to remember, it is not paid by Social Security. It's not reported on your tax return as Social Security. It's paid by OPM, and it goes into your pension. So it doesn't get special tax benefits that Social Security does. But I can see a hue and cry with this one. You know, this is part of my three-legged stool, and now you're sawing off part of the leg.
Well, and I think, too, a lot of people just accept it. I mean, I understand it. If they go to one of your seminars, they'll hear about it. But otherwise, I think a lot of people don't know it exists. But when they find out it's going to be taken away, that's when you'll have the problems.
Yeah, and if you have a lot of years under FERS and you retire, let's say, with 30 or more before age 62 and therefore get the supplement, that can be as, you know, into the four figures extra a month on top of your FERS annuity. So it is a big deal. And people are not going to like that.
Yeah, it's a pretty substantial deal. And you have people that have to retire before they're 60. They don't have a choice. The law enforcement, firefighters, right?
Yeah, but their proposal is to exempt those folks from the elimination of the supplement. That's the proposal. Am I right, Mike?
Yeah. If you look at the January 18th Federal Report column, JAWS 4 is the title, and in it, it spells out there how this supplement would work, and it says it would not apply to firefighters, law enforcement personnel, air traffic control controllers and others whose jobs have a mandatory retirement age that is less than 62. Yeah. So some of those people, it's 55 or 57. So,
57.
Yeah. So it would not apply to them. And that's taken a lot of the political sting out of this, because those groups tend to be well organized and popular with the politicians. And if they're exempt from this, in other words, they won't lose it, that makes it that much more likely that it will happen.
All righty, Mike. Now, you referred to this January 18th article, 2012. This is, of course, the one you wrote.
Right.
And how would one get that if they wanted to read it?
If you go to federalnewsradio.com, and then there'll be, you scroll down slightly, and you'll see four pictures, myself and three staff people who write columns or editorials or essays, and just click on me. And then you'll go to it'll give you the current column, and it says other columns, and you'll see it. And the headline is literally Jaws 4 coming, guess who's the bait? And that's for, of course, the Jaws movie. And the idea was to catch people's eye. So you can do it that way.
And, of course, you're the young, best-looking of the four.
Of course, yes.
Now, just look for that. You don't need anything else.
Mature, I think, is the...
All righty. But do you do this every day, once a week?
Five times a week. Yeah, Monday through Friday.
And you also have a show?
On Wednesday, 10 o'clock, your turn. I forget the name of it. Your Turn with Mike Causey. We typically have three guests, a couple of people from the Federal Times come in on a more or less regular basis, and then we have somebody from the federal or contractor community. And people can call in like as they can with your show.
Okay. I hope they call in more than they do on our show. But anyway, we're at 202-465-3080. Now, nobody should take offense to that comment. We just don't get a lot of calls, I think, for two reasons. One, people don't want to be the first to call. And second, people are working for the most part, except in other time zones. However, at night, this really takes a substantial spike in the access on the archive version of it, as well as Tuesday night. And it kind of tapers off on Wednesday. But I think it's fairly well received. Some agencies, for those of you all listening that don't have it, they put it on their agency intranet. Now, there are no commercials on it. And we just talked federal benefits and things related there too. Don't tell anything.
A lot of agencies, I think, consider it part of the HR process. As you say, there's no sponsors, so it's people can listen. It's helpful information, and often it's people from the various federal agencies themselves, from their HR and financial operations. So it is a useful thing. I think it's kind of akin to the agencies that let people do their shopping for their health insurance on government time. They figure this is time and money well spent.
Sure, and it's some things that they don't normally get. They might talk about it at lunch, or they might talk about it at a break, but I would like to think we're more authoritative.
Well, I think, too, people, sometimes people are suspicious of their employer, whoever it may be, and you come in as sort of a neutral observer with just the facts. And we've talked about this before, too, and I've always thought it's a shame, and I wish it had happened in my career. But we didn't get any retirement counseling until you were, I think, 5 years out from being eligible to retire. And a lot of agencies do that. I understand why they do it, and it's wonderful. It's useful. They pay for it. Generally speaking, it's a good thing. But I've always thought that they should do it at the beginning of a career, and then again at mid-career, as a retention tool, because you come to work somewhere, you're age 23, you're probably not thinking much about Roths, and you're never going to get old enough to retire. You just don't think that way. But if you become aware through a neutral party like you or like John Elliott, and these are people who've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, know the drill, and they say, here's what you ought to be considering, here are your options, I think it would help the government keep people.
Yeah, we do it. We do a beginning career seminar. And we do a mid-career seminar. Mid-career seminar is becoming more popular, and many of these are 2 days. Some of them are 3 days. But some agencies might feel a budget squeeze or don't want the same person going to the same seminar 4 times a year. Yeah. So we have a retirement refresher course. It's just 3 hours. So we give you the base knowledge, et cetera. And, of course, you can email us with questions and the like. But you're right. And I'm finding more, and I say this often on the show, I'm finding more younger people in the pre-retirement seminar. I'm talking 30-somethings. and usually go up at the break, and people have heard this before, and to the person they almost say, I don't want to mess up like some other people in this class maybe did. I want to know now.
And well, that's
pretty,
right.
Pretty easy to pick out.
There hasn't been a recession in their lifetime. Yeah. You know, this is a first. So I think a lot of people were jolted. And those of us of the older generation, we didn't go through the Great Depression. So, you know, what our parents went through and some of their habits they developed because of the Depression, we don't really understand. Now with this recession, which is a bump in the road compared to the Great Depression, but nevertheless, it's rattled a lot of people and it's changed their thinking and their investing patterns.
Yeah, I date myself a little bit, but when I got out of school in the early 70s, maybe even 1970, it was a pretty rough recession. And you couldn't find a job, and I just found a job doing tax returns and fortunately stayed with it for a scant 43 years. Mm-hmm. But that's how I appreciated what I had.
Yeah.
And there was another, I think, not as bad as the one at 70. In the 80s, it was a pretty bad recession.
There was one 87, and there was one in, they call it the Eisenhower recession, I think, of 57, but it seems to hit in sevens. But again, they're nothing like the Great Depression when you had 25-30% of the people out of work for 6 years. You know, I mean, what ended World War II, what ended the Depression, wasn't these great Roosevelt programs, although they helped, but it was World War II. That's what ended the Depression.
Okay, moving forward. Anyway, let's read an email. Let's read a Mike email. I haven't read this, Mike. Mike. As far as a politically proposed 0.5% pay raise next year, I would rather have no raise at all and a bigger raise in the following year. This is just another political stunt by to give us a negligible amount. Last year's series of 3.6% COLA increases. I'm not so sure I'm following that, but who got 3.6%?
They got it this year. They got it in January of this year, and it's only for people who are retired. But they hadn't had a cost of living adjustment for 2 years, so things have been tough all over.
Yeah, and the first people only got 2.6.
Yeah. Now, his point, he's seeing this as a political stunt and sort of peanuts. And that would have been my reaction that, why bother? But all the unions and the observers are saying, no, the fact that he proposed 0.5 is good because that means the White House is for some pay raise in January of 2013 as opposed to extending the freeze another year. So, it depends on how you look at it. And as far as motives go, you can never really tell what people's motives are.
Okay, here's another one. With 18 months left to go before eligibility to retire and under CSRS, what is the sense that people like me would be grandfathered into any changes to the federal retirement system?
Well, the any is the operative word. What I think they're referring to is go high three to high five, and if that happens, it would probably be prospective in that it might be made effective in January of 2013 or January 2014. Probably wouldn't be backdated for people. And in that case, they'd have plenty of time to see if it had been approved, if it was going to be signed, they'd have plenty of time to get out. But as far as any changes, I don't know what that would mean.
We talked about the high three versus the high five, and in today's environment, I'm not so sure there's much difference between a high three and a high five if there's no COLA or if we see a very small one. So currently, I don't know that it's a major hit unless somebody was really moving up the grade level.
Well, if you got
and later in life, later in their career.
Yeah. We'll run it by John.
Yeah, that was the next question. John, have you ever done any calculations on what it would mean? Let's say a normal COLA of 2 or 3%.
Well,
what's the difference between?
It's not a COLA; it's a pay adjustment for employees.
Pay adjustment.
It's not based on any cost of living formula or index.
Okay,
that's for retirees.
Okay, but the 2 or 3%, call it what you want, salary increase.
What would it
mean 3 years versus five?
I've seen it, and it depends on your salary level and all variety of things,
yeah.
But that you'd have to work another 6 months or up to 18 months to equal it.
It's not
the end of the world.
I've seen figures of 2% difference. The high five means your annuity might be 2% less, but it's highly variable. You know, it just depends. on many factors. Now, the 5-5 formula, if it happens, is going to be just the same as the high 3 formula, except it's going to be based on typically your last 5 years before retirement instead of your last 3. So, yes, it's going to have, could potentially reduce your annuity, but not necessarily drastically.
But as Mike mentioned, and I'm sure as you taught as well, in order to get over that, if you worked a certain period of time longer than what you anticipated, you might mitigate that change.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you could. And the other thing, too, people should remember, it used to be high five.
I didn't know that.
It was 20 years ago or something like that, and they changed it to high three, you know. Whatever it was, it used to be that. And in the private sector, it is typically high five. If they even have a...
If they even have one, right?
Yeah, I think, and I could be wrong. It's not important in this case. But I think in the late 60s, up to the late 60s, it was a high five. But as far as I can remember, when I came into the government, it had gone to a high three. So it's been a while since it's been a high five, but there is precedent for the high five.
All right. If it happens, we will certainly include in the radio show as well as in the seminars, okay, this is what it really means to you. You can't drill down to the person in the class, but generally speaking, if you make between X and Y, this is what it means to you, and this is how you overcome it.
Right. And John's right. It does vary greatly depending on a number of things. But the bottom line is, if you wanted to retire on an annuity of $1,300 a month, and the high five and the high three would change that, you could simply work 6 more months, 15 more months, 2 more years. You're still getting a salary while you're doing it, but you can still hit that level. But it's you can't just do a one-formula-fits-all calculation.
Yeah, you need to do 2 estimates. If the high five is looming out there and you're worried about it, you need to do, and you can get out before the high five hits you. You just do 2 estimates and... See what the difference is. Now, typically your HR office could do those 2 estimates. Most HR offices have software, and I'm sure they could jerry-rig that to do the high five or purchase new software. Or you can do it manually. Now, in our course book, we give you all the charts and all the instructions on how to do your own estimates manually. And it's relatively easy. You'll see how easy it is if you sit through our course. I think we sell them to non-course participants for $19.95.
We do.
Okay, that is fairly low price. But yeah, we give you all the materials in the seminar book where you can do your own estimates. Now, it's better to take the seminar with the book, but... It can be done, and it's not hard. It's not rocket science.
Alrighty. So that would potentially be a bad thing that isn't as bad as it sounds. Somebody's going to say that's easy for me to say, but we give you the opportunity to do an end around it. There was there's an email that came in, actually it was late last night. Now, it doesn't have anything to do with this, but it has everything to do with the voluntary contribution into a Roth. Now, this person really did it in a way that isn't as tough as the VC directly to the Roth. They took the voluntary contribution and they put it into their traditional IRA, and then they moved it over to the Roth. The traditional IRA didn't have that much taxable income in it, so when they moved the money over to the Roth, the tax hit was very light. And somebody would say, well, that's kind of an indirect way to get the same money to the same place. It's true, but there's something lingering out there that indicates that moving money from the voluntary contribution to the Roth could, underline the word could, be taxable. Could. But there's a way around that as well. So we don't want to go there now. We did do a whole show on this on July 11th last year, 2011, and can be listened to on our website, NITPINC.com. I'd urge you to listen to the second half of that show, though, because it focused in on the VC directly to the Roth and the potential issue. Let's say potential. So the people that have done it don't jump off the top of the building and say, you didn't tell me this. There's a way around everything in taxes, generally. Specifically here, there is. But this person did it, and I was, he attended one of our seminars, and actually I met the individual, and I'm very happy to see that he made the right move. What other questions do we have?
Well, you know, one thing, not to beat the high three, high five to death, but as other people on the beat have reported, this is probably the least damaging of any of the hits they could do to people, and yet it's the one that seems that the most people have focused most attention on. So they're worrying about a thing that is fairly minimal compared to the other things they're looking at.
There was a caller on one of the prior shows, and we were talking about this. I don't think either one, there was another person on the other side of the mic here, and they were just going on and on and on about this high three to high five, and it was during the period of time there were no raises, and we kind of mentioned it doesn't make any difference, and they just went to the moon with that. And
it's a cause celeb for a lot of people.
And I said, it doesn't make any difference. Mathematically, it means nothing. Mm-hmm. And the response was, but the individual didn't get a cola.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah, right. That's why it's the same.
Well, and John pointed out, too, that word cola is used incorrectly all of the time, and members of Congress use it. They'll talk about a pay raise for themselves as a cola. It's a cost of living adjustment. It's not. It's a pay raise that's decided by a variety of things, physical and political, but it is not a cola. Retirees get colas. They get it based on the inflation index.
Speaking of colas for retirees, there was some, I don't know how far it got or if it ever will get anywhere, to change the COLA formula, which you pointed out in columns past that it might average a reduction of 0.5% in the cost of living.
Yeah, that's right. And that would be a tremendous amount of money.
And long before this current kerfuffle over federal benefits was occurring, there were people, the late Senator Moynihan being one, that felt the current COLA formula based on the consumer price index overstated inflation. The proposal, which makes all kinds of sense to me, and I'm a retiree, I'd be affected by this as well as presumably all Social Security participants. That's probably why it may not happen, because of the Social Security participants. But anyway, the theory behind the change is that people will then seek cheaper goods. Consumer price index measures the rise in a whole laundry list of goods, gas, food, blah, blah, blah. And they say in inflationary times, that people will seek cheaper versions of what they were going to buy, not necessarily do without. That's the theory behind this change, which makes all kinds of sense to me. Even though I would be, as a retiree, as a CSRS retiree, and then eventually I'll start drawing a Social Security benefit, so I'd be affected by that. But still, it's not a terrible, terrible thing if it happens. But again, if they just do it to federal employees, or retirees rather, the savings would be negligible. I doubt they have. I frankly don't believe they have the guts to do it for Social
Security. It's called the chained CPI, as in CHAINE, chained. And John's right. What it would do, the current CPI assumes everybody buys a refrigerator every year. Everybody since has college tuition. It has all of these different things in it. Many retirees don't fit into that mix after you've retired for whatever reason, financial, or maybe you've downsized your housing or something, but you don't buy those things. You buy other things, but you don't buy those things. And to John's point, that the example they make, and it almost, this is almost a Romney-like thing, saying, I'll bet you $10,000 on this. But the idea is that if sirloin steak gets really expensive, which it has, by the way, you downsize to hamburger, ground beef, and that's what he's talking about, and that's the theory behind the change CPI. And it makes sense, because that's what people generally do. They do downsize and look for bargains and whatnot.
Yeah, they don't go without necessarily.
Right.
They'll buy a cheaper refrigerator or look for sales or where they might not have before.
The counter argument to that is if it keeps things keep getting worse, you'll downsize every year and you'll go from sirloin to ground beef to cat food at some point.
As an investor, which I'm not, you have good times, and then when things get to be less good times, like you say, you still do it, but you come down.
Yeah.
Walmart goes through the roof. Everything's a dollar goes through the roof. They do better. Restaurant chains that maybe serve medium-priced meals and the like, they do well because the money then shifts from the higher-end stuff to less expensive stuff. I hope things get real better, so if they get bad again, with all this wisdom of 43 years, I'll go out and buy everything's a dollar or Walmart.
Well, I went to a department store Saturday for something, and they were having, of course, they can mark it up and then mark it down, but they were having a sale where everything was 40% off. And as I bought this pair of pants, the guy looked at me, and I was like getting into a speakeasy in the 1920s, but he said, "Come back tomorrow." And he handed me a slip, and it was for an additional 25%. So 40% off plus 25% off, you know, one more day and they'll pay me to come in. But it does look good. There's some upsides to a recession.
All right. Positive thing. I mean, the federal workforce working for the feds is a positive thing. So maybe they won't get this, but private industry doesn't get it. What could they do? John, you work for the Fed. So what could they do so that they might get a step increase? Is a step increase automatic? Do you have to do certain things?
Well, in theory, and it's just a theory, is that to get a step increase, a within grade increase, as it's officially called, your performance has to be satisfactory. Not great, but satisfactory. But virtually everyone gets one. And I, at my long experience in government, I can attest that, you know, if people were evaluated fairly, there would be far fewer satisfactory performers than they're deemed currently. But that was my perspective as a manager. But this pay freeze business, which has been going on for a couple of years now, has not exempted people from getting within grades. So people are still getting within grades. The folks in Congress, I guess, forgot about that.
The average federal salary fiscal year before last went up 1.3%. And that was the smallest increase in years, but that reflects the number of ingrades. You know, they're 3%. They're worth 3%. And as John said, they're supposed to be based on merit. In fact, they're semi-automatic. 99% of the people who come do get them.
They're virtually automatic, not literally, but virtually automatic from my experience. And I'm fairly confident nothing has changed.
How about grade level changes? Does that get frozen when they freeze the salaries?
You mean promotions?
Uh-huh.
No, people can still get a raise through a promotion as well under the current scheme. They just can't get those January pay adjustment raises. They haven't been getting them.
Okay.
And what that 0.5% raise refers to is the January pay raise typically is effective the first full pay period in January. That's what the freeze affects.
Yeah, every year, because of the within grade increases, anywhere from a third to a quarter to a fifth of the entire federal population gets a 3% raise, regardless of whether there's another raise or no raise.
Now, the Wiggies are not, they're only once a year for the first three steps of your grade.
What's a Wiggy?
A within grade increase.
Okay.
In grade.
Yeah, it's not a hairpiece.
Every 2 years.
And then the middle steps. Grades, it's every 2 years, yeah. I believe. And then it's amazing what I've forgotten.
It's there 3 years.
And then
the
final three steps, there are 10 steps to grade, are 3 years apart, as I recall.
And there's about a 30% differential from the top to the bottom. But the bottom line, that's why I said a fifth to a third, because so there's always somebody getting them, but at a different pace level.
Yeah, Dan, at different times.
Yeah.
All righty, with some of the, if you will, pay freezes and the like, are there any downsizing? Or you see the early out and you see the $25,000 reward, which you really got to look at. If you're going out anyway, it's a great deal. If it shouldn't prompt you to go out, because after taxes, it isn't going to mean that much to you over a lifetime. But is there a call to reduce the size of employment as well? Let's do that one, and two, number of contractors.
Well, all of the agencies have gotten their budgets for a change. Congress actually approved the budgets. And everyone that I know of has reduced it considerably. And the president went over to the Pentagon, 2 weeks ago, and called for a downsizing, sort of like the Cold War benefit that we got when the Soviet Union fell, or we thought we got. I would say they're all looking to downsize to some degree. IRS got $250 million or $450 million less than it asked for and less than its previous budget. So as far as I know, they're all looking to downsize. Haven't heard any talk about layoffs or furloughs yet, but that's possible. But they're all trying the buyout route.
Yeah, the proposals, at least that you've mentioned in your column, have been through attrition.
Right.
You just couldn't. People leave, retire, leave for other reasons, and then you just don't get to replace them. The problem with the downsizing that has been bandied about, and downsizing in the past, particularly under the Clinton administration, is it's like one size fits all. Rather than look at functions, should the government be doing this function? Can we consolidate and eliminate jobs? They say, oh, each agency takes a haircut, no matter what the mission of the agency is, which during the Clinton years made no sense. And will make no sense again. What they should be doing and is looking at functions of government, and does the government need to be doing a particular function? I think we all feel we need homeland security. And, you know, but for example, in the age of terrorism, do you really want the FBI to be cut? I don't. You know, so it's if they'd approach it like a business, like Bain Capital or something like that, it would be more effective.
Well, I heard a brilliant discussion the other day on the radio. I think three people, and one of them was an analyst. I think he's at Brookings now, but he had been at the Pentagon. I don't even know which administration. And he had been in the military, so he'd actually done all of these various things. And he made exactly the argument John's making. He said, in the case of the Pentagon, don't cut it across the board. He said, with the military, and he was looking particularly at the Army, he said, cut the back room, cut the support people. He said, leave exactly the same number of troops you have now, because we've got two wars ongoing, and we're looking at Iran very hard now. The Horn of Africa is heating up and all that kind of thing. But he said, keep the number of uniformed military, the people at the sharp end of the spear, but clean out the back room. And that seems to make a lot of sense, but on an across-the-board cut, you can't do that.
You're right. So let's say somebody is impacted by an across-the-board cut. John, in your experience, what did they do? Did they look to take a lateral someplace if that was available? Did they get mad and leave? Did they work harder and stay longer? What was your general observation during your career?
Well, I was at the Office of Personnel Management through two RIFs. And reduction in force, I'm sorry. And but, you know, people sometimes are placed in lower positions through reduction in force. Others come out of the government altogether, you know. And that happened in 1982 at my agency and was repeated in the 90s under the Clinton administration. Wasn't quite as severe as the 82 reduction in force. But in theory, you're supposed to reduce the population of a given agency. And historically, the Department of Defense, the civilian forces in the Department of Defense, would go through reductions in force because of base closings, for example. So people do lose their jobs that have them. But that has not been a popular thing to do in recent history. And again, this current proposal wouldn't do that. It would just reduce the size of the workforce through attrition, which means no current employee under the proposals that I've read in Mike's column, at least, would not, you know, they'd keep their jobs until they wanted to leave, either through retirement or find another job.
But during the hit Reagan, he mentioned, and then the Clinton cuts, Reagan downsized some of the domestic agencies, but expanded defense. So some of those people moved into jobs, you know, in the,
yeah, now,
the other side.
Now, there's this other thing in the Clinton years, and I assume maybe the Reagan years, that federal employees who are what we call RIFT actually lose their jobs. Get priority consideration for rehire back into the federal government, and that could be an entirely different agency, but they get priority. That doesn't mean they have a right to return, but they have to be considered before anyone without and a non-federal, former federal employee is considered. So they do have some protections. And oftentimes these reductions aren't as bad as people thought they were going to be. I mean, people do find other jobs in the federal government, oftentimes within their own agency. And in the riff of the 90s, one of my former bosses at OPM said, John, if you're hit in this reduction in force, you come see me. The implication being I would be hired in another part of the agency by her, which was very flattering, and I believed her. You know, I probably would have been, and I wasn't affected in either RIF of 82 or the one in the mid-90s. I escaped totally. I came close in the 82 one, but again, I had a boss who reached back and got me by the scruff of the neck and pulled me out of the RIF jaws. I can't remember if I was going out the door or going to a lower grade, but nothing bad happened to me. So things like that can happen, and these RIF procedures can be manipulated. They're highly complex, and they can be manipulated so that favorite people can be kept unhurt.
Right, and these priority placement things, too. They always say, we have a great system in place. Come over and see us. But if they don't want you, they're not going to take you.
And DOD
has... You'll be too short or something.
DOD has a priority placement system on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
You literally cannot hire anybody if there's a former DOD employee out there without a job. So that it's even a higher a tougher priority placement system than is generally in place throughout the rest of the government.
So this is a good thing.
It's a good thing.
If you get fired, yeah.
If you get fired or let go through a reduction through no fault of your own, just downsizing.
Are there any?
It is a good thing. Yeah.
Is there a grievance procedure that if you are let go, you can file a grievance procedure?
Of course. Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. No. I didn't mean, of course, in a flip way. There is. Yeah. And I knew a lady that was, can't remember if she lost her job or was downgraded, but I said she should appeal because she was manipulated out of her job, and she was a good performer. I wasn't I thought, through misapplication of the RIF rules, that she didn't want to appeal. And she ended up, I guess, okay, finding another job within the agency or another agency. It's been years. But that can happen. So if you are caught, I would automatically appeal. Just as a matter of course, exercise your appeal rights. Because honest mistakes can be made, as well as dishonest mistakes.
All righty. So if we were to review the last 50 minutes, we got good things coming with the Roth TSP. All is not bad as far as step increases. It sounds like they're somewhat semi-automatic. But on the other side, we need to be aware that if something happened that we had to contribute more money, probably not going to be a ton. I don't know. I don't know the percentage. I don't even want to guess, but I doubt, you know, it's not going to go from 7 to 9%.
Well, it would go up to 4 for FERS and up to 8 for CSRS.
Okay. So if it went up, it goes up. How then do you compensate for that? And we gave people some ideas. If the high 3 goes to the high 5, maybe 6 more months on the job mitigates that. So all is not lost. Got a great job. You got a great retirement system. I'm not trying to be patronizing, and but they do.
Not only a great job, but a job.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, to remember, we started out this 2011 the same way. You know, we worried, and not without reason, but we worried all last year. This super committee was going to do this. This committee was going to do this. The bipartisan whatever, and nothing happened. End of the line, nothing happened. Next deadline is February 29th, when this joint House Senate Republican Democratic Commission is supposed to make its recommendations.
And to keep on top of all that, we would read your column daily. And how do you do that again?
Go to federalnewsradio.com and click on the Federal Report.
And listen to this show. Have it broadcast on your intranet. Again, no commercials. And John and Mike will be back soon. And next week, though, Joe Sullender and Tammy come in and talk about financial planning. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.